It seems the vice president, as you must know by now, went out hunting with a buddy of his, a millionaire, and I guess the vice president was in a hurry to get something, got instead the millionaire in the chest, in the face, not good. He's in intensive care. The vice president is probably, I heard he was at his side, probably saying, "Well, I'm really sorry." The vice president shot a guy by mistake. Imagine that. Imagine how, well, I don't know. His heart must be all right. That's all I can say. Record-setting snow buries Northeast. That's a headline. Record-breaking storm buried sections of the Northeast under more than about 2 feet of snow on Sunday. In fact, actually, it's a record. The old record was 26.4 inches. This time, they got 26.9 inches. We're going to have more and more record-breaking weather. More on that in a little bit. Unheeded warnings, poor planning, and apathy in recognizing the scope of Hurricane Katrina's destruction led to the slow emergency response from the White House on down to local parishes. Now, that's the result of a House investigation, a 600-page report, and I wonder how much that cost. I'm sure that quite a few of you probably could have come up with that for quite a bit less. What do you think? Unheeded warnings, poor planning, and apathy. That took 600 pages of government work to generate. In a moment, as Paul would say, the rest of the story. Just like a cat. My webcam photograph tonight is of Dusty. She is the, I think she's the youngest member of the household now. I don't know if it's Dusty or Abydos, but I think Dusty. Anyway, she is truly a beautiful cat. And that was taken very close to her. So she's not as big as you think, but she's certainly getting big. And when we got her, she could walk around in the palm of my hand. I mean, Dusty was a little one. And all day long today, I've been trying to teach her to jump up on my lap, and she got very close. So wouldn't you know, just a minute and a half ago, she came strolling in here while I'm on the air and sat there thinking about jumping up on my lap and started to. And I went, "Oh, Dusty, we tried all day, and now you want to get up here." Anyway, that's Dusty in the photograph. Dr. Hansen, I want to talk to you now. Would somebody out there, please, acquainted with the now, I shouldn't say infamous, the famous Dr. Hansen, who said to hell with you, NASA. But, well, he didn't say, that's not a direct quote, but I mean, he really wants to talk, and they really don't want him to talk. He said the ocean's temperatures off Santa Barbara are now the highest in 1,400 years. That was Dusty you just heard. I don't know if you heard that or not. After she's out, she doesn't like it. After that speech and the release of data by Dr. Hansen on December 15th showing that 2005 was the warmest year in at least a century, officials at NASA headquarters repeatedly phoned public affairs officers who relayed the warning to Dr. Hansen that there would be, quote, dire consequences, end quote, if such statements continued. Those officers said Dr. Hansen said in interviews, among the restrictions, according to Dr. Hansen, and an internal draft memorandum he reported to the LA Times, was that his supervisors could stand in for him in any news media interviews. Oh, come on, doctor. Dr. Hansen and some of his colleagues said interviews were canceled as a result. Now, Dr. Hansen is speaking out despite NASA's best wishes, and I want to interview you, doctor. So, those close to Dr. Hansen, please tell him he's got an open, nationwide platform. He's obviously got the cojones to do this kind of thing. Well, I've got an ear. I've got a microphone, Dr. Hansen. Let's rock. January, well, by the way, coming up next hour is Howard Bloom. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant man. January was a fair weather friend regarding the warmest January on record, allowing Americans to save a lot of money on their heating. But like all good things, it seems to have come to an end. The country's average temp for the month, 39.5 degrees Fahrenheit. That would be, get this, folks, 8.5 degrees above average for January. On the other hand, while much of the U.S. was basking in warm weather, parts of Europe and Asia were battered by bitter cold. Climate details for the rest of the world for January are expected to be available perhaps next week. A lot of records getting made. Workers at the Grandfather Mountain area described an unreal scene about a couple of weeks ago now, actually, when record wind gusts of at least 200 miles an hour battered the North Carolina tourist attraction in the Northwest Mountains. Can you imagine that? In excess, probably, of 200 miles an hour. Our workers who were inside the visitor center said it was very much like a tornado, a whirlwind, inside the building after, that is to say, said Cray Morton, the windows broke. Morton said staff members didn't know how strong the northwest winds really blew late Tuesday night and early Wednesday. National Weather Service approved anemometer measures only 200 miles an hour. Morton said the gusts got to that level several times, actually exceeded that mark. That broke the Grandfather Mountain record of 195.5 miles an hour set on April 18th, 1997. So, is anybody out there, raise your hand, is anybody left out there? Dusty, you're not coming in. Is anybody left out there who doesn't believe that we really are entering a time of record after record after record with regard to the weather falling by the wayside? Anybody left? I don't see any hands. A Russian astronomer has predicted that Earth is going to experience a, quote, mini ice age in the middle of this century caused by low solar activity. Well, according to that, then we should be in it right now. Solar activity has been just pathetically small. We are at the bottom of the sun cycle right now, probably within maybe less than a year of the bottom. Nobody knows for sure until the sun switches polarity, and then we'll know that it occurred, but we're very near the bottom. Anyway, this Russian scientist in St. Petersburg said Monday that temperatures are going to begin falling 6 or 7 years from now when global warming caused by increased solar activity in the 20th century reaches its peak. The coldest period is going to occur 15 to 20 years after a major solar output decline, which will occur between 2035 and 2045. This is wild stuff. It comes from Physics Web, and it's about ball lightning. If you've ever seen a mysterious ball of lightning chasing a cow or maybe flying through your window during a thunderstorm, take comfort from the fact that you've witnessed a very rare phenomena. Indeed, ball lightning, a slow-moving ball of light that is occasionally seen at ground levels during thunderstorms, has puzzled scientists now for centuries, but now researchers in Israel, get this, have built a system that can create lightning balls in the lab. The work may not only help us to understand ball lightning, but could even lead to practical applications that make use of these artificial balls. Ball lightning is thought to be a ball of plasma that's formed when a bolt of lightning hits the ground and creates a molten, in quotes, hot spot. Now, the ball can typically measure 30 centimeters across, can last for a few seconds, though they're generally created during thunderstorms. Eli Gerby and Vladimir Victor from Tel Aviv University in Israel have now been able to make lightning balls in the lab using a microwave drill. Check this out. The device consists of the magnetron from your average 600-watt domestic microwave oven, and it concentrates all the power into a volume of just 1 cubic centimeter. Don't try this at home. but I'm sure tempted to. The researchers inject the microwaves through a pointed rod into a solid substrate made from glass, silicon, germanium, alumina, or other ceramics. The energy from the microwaves then will produce a molten hotspot in the substrate. What the scientists do then is pull the microwave drill out of the solid, which drags the molten hotspot and creates a hot drop. This hot drop then becomes a floating fireball, plasma, folks, that measures about 3 centimeters across, lasts for some tens of milliseconds. The fireball looks just like a hot jellyfish quivering, said Jerby, and in fact, buoyant in the air. So if, they did this with an average microwave oven and a little more, that really sounds like fun at home, huh? But again, don't try that at home, even though I'm sorely tempted. Astronomers have discovered what they call an Earth-like planet. You may have heard this, orbiting a distant star. It's a big discovery, Earth-like planet. They feel they're finally getting close to a possible discovery of alien life. They're searching for another relatively small rocky planet where temperatures are neither too hot nor too cold for life to exist. You know, in parentheses, it should say, as we know it. But doesn't. I added that. Most of the planets we discover are huge, gaseous things like Jupiter. And the only reason that we're discovering those is because they're big enough to be seen. You know, the way astronomers are seeing these planets now is by looking at a star and then watching for something to blink. Well, that used to puzzle them. Why do we see it blink out every now and then? Well, the reason is because planets are passing between our view of that star and we have light interrupt us. Do, in fact, other worlds exist beyond planets? Non-scientists speak frequently, as you know, of other dimensions, like Michio Kaku, and people who have had UFO encounters often say they think it's where ETs come from. Quantum physicists call these parallel universes, or brain worlds, that's B-R-A-N-E, worlds, membrane-like places where there are more than the simple three dimensions that we have here on Earth, four dimensions if you include time. Do these other worlds really exist? Researchers are discovering definitely do. A neutrino detector at the South Pole called Amanda, what a nice name, has detected ghost-like particles from space that could act as probes to a world of more dimensions than exist here on Earth. This is from Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country. Neutrinos are particles that are similar to electrons, but they do not carry an electric charge. Because neutrinos are electrically neutral, they're not affected by the electromagnetic forces which act on electrons and can travel great distances without being affected by gravity. They can thus be spotted because they travel in a straight line rather than a curve. Earlier research into parallel universes postulated that everything that is possible to happen does happen somewhere in some universe. This could explain things like mediums who contact the dead. You see, they'd somehow be entering another universe where the person being contacted had not died. Quantum theories have now evolved to embrace the idea of worlds with more or fewer dimensions than ours, and physicists think these other universes may exist all around us. But of course, we're unaware of them. And now scientists are trying to find them. A Radio Shack in southwestern Canada, stop me if you've heard this, has been plagued by paranormal activity, many locals believing the store events are a sign of the end. The end of everything or Radio Shack? Some employees have heard a pedometer chanting the Lord's Prayer backwards. That's right, you heard correctly. A pedometer sitting in the store chanting the Lord's Prayer backwards. That would be concerning. The Radio Shack looks like any other. They have PCs, they have radios, they're unidentifiable cables and electronic devices, but this retail outlet has something that all the other stores don't. The talking pedometer is possessed, says an attractive young employee. Every few days or so, the tinny, lurching female voice announcing how many steps this stationary pedometer has taken and echoes through the store while I work at it. Then it stops immediately when I walk around the corner to shut it off. Other employees have had run-ins with the talking pedometer. Some employees have heard the pedometer chanting the Lord's Prayer backwards. The pedometer told a regional manager that it would take him to hell. I'm sorry, I hadn't read this part. Let me read that again. The pedometer told a regional manager that it would take him to hell. And once the pedometer held a 10-minute conversation with an employee on why selling $30 USB cables is evil. I hadn't read this before. I didn't get down this far. This is just the latest in a long string of events. Recently, a dual-headed display computer arrived at the store, but they didn't order one, and no one's been able to figure out who sent it. Last summer, Vatican and Sprint officials were called in to investigate the PCS guy cardboard stand-up that was crying blood. This can't be real. Vatican officials have yet to comment on the incident. While the cardboard man is gone now, the feeling of doom and bloodstained carpet remains. So if you're in a Radio Shack in southwestern Canada and a pedometer begins talking to you, you may want to consider a hasty exit. Now, it's from a news service called SNN in Burnaby. All right, SSN in Burnaby. If you want to try to verify that story, that's the source. Now, here's a story that makes all kinds of sense to me. You know, most of the colds, the illness, the flu, the terrible things that happen to us in America, around the world, in fact, they occur because we pass a virus from person to person, right? And any halfway informed medical official will tell you very quickly that the way to stop all of this, well, most of it anyway, is, for God's sakes, wash your hands. Or if here in the West, as is the case, I mean, people meet each other and men stick out their hands and you shake hands, a good hearty handshake, right? Well, wrong. Here is an article by George H. Russell, which suggests don't shake hands, instead bow for health. I believe, he says, that we could vastly improve the health of our citizenry and save billions of dollars. Billions, that is, in costs associated with colds, flu, and other illnesses, if we as Americans would simply adopt the practice of bowing when greeting each other. Let's all turn Japanese. Millions of Americans at any given time are infected with various viruses, the symptoms of which often are concealed by the use of a vast array of medications you can get over the counter, which allow sick people not to look sick, and they can keep working, but they're going to spread this thing like the black plague. And so I think George Russell is dead flat right. What we need to do is to either get manic about washing our hands, or we need to take turn Japanese, and instead of shaking hands, simply bow. It's a wonderful gesture of respect and greeting and goodbye, and really it's not bad at all, except for people with bad backs. And so I think it's a grand idea, and it would stop so much disease. What do you folks say? In addition to getting rid of the godforsaken time change we have to go through twice a year, what do you say we stop shaking hands? I assume you may have looked outside. It's a great big moon out there, full last night, I think, and very full tonight, just bathing the desert in bright moonlight. Good morning. First-time caller line, you are on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Matt from Seattle.
Hi, Matt.
I've just been watching the miniseries Taken on video.
Taken. Yes, I too bought the DVD set and watched Taken, and I've got to say, and I'm going to say that Dakota Fanning did the acting job of a little child's lifetime. I had never seen anything like that in my whole life. God, it was incredible.
Yeah, it's something. I was wondering, are you going to have anything on Richard Hoagland in the future?
Am I going to have anything on Richard Hoagland?
Yeah,
I probably. I would imagine so, yes.
Anything about the Mars or what have you?
Yes, if there is big breaking news about Mars, he'd be the guy, I guess, huh?
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yes, it is indeed interesting. Anybody else out there see Dakota Fanning in Taken? My God, she was incredible. I mean, there was so much adult behind that little child's eyes, and her speech pattern, everything about her was so much perfection in Taken. Any of the rest of you react to her that way? I thought she was just brilliant. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
I think Dakota Fanning is about 40 years old in a little child's body.
Yeah, man, you're right.
Look here, Art. I caught your show last evening, and you were talking to your guest about the DVD wars, the HD DVD wars that are
going
to happen.
Yes, Blu-ray versus HD.
Yes, sir. I have a HD DVD coming from a friend of mine in Japan. He works for Aflac there.
Well, listen,
I'm bringing it over.
I considered that. It's possible to go on the web and buy the Japanese version.
Yes, sir.
I'm well aware of that, but, you know, I kind of chickened out because it's all going to be in, it's going to come with an instruction book written in kanji.
I'm not looking forward to that.
People spend entire lifetimes trying to learn to speak, read that, so lots of ruck.
Well, let me say this. I believe the Blu-ray disc, which is probably a better format, because I had Beta, and I tried for years to convince my friends Beta was better than VHS.
Well, it was better.
It was better. Doggone sure was. But the HD DVD will play your old DVDs. Blu-ray will not.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
I heard that Blu-ray overcame that. Recent news was that they overcame that.
Well, I don't know if they did or not, sir. This guy also went to the Las Vegas electronics show.
CES show, yeah.
But I tell you, I can't wait. Well,
that makes two of us.
A lot of folks don't realize, though, that the DVDs we've been buying for years are nowhere near high-definition quality.
I know. I went out recently and bought a Sony HD camera.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and so let me tell you how much I'm waiting for Blu-ray. In other words, right now I'm storing this on the mini tapes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, mini DV, right?
But I'm salivating for Blu-ray.
I tell you what, I love that 16:9 ratio, the widescreen ratio.
Oh,
it's
baby.
Wonderful.
It certainly is.
But I'm going to tell you, I just cannot wait for this stuff to come out, and everybody's just salivating.
Well, you obviously can't wait. You ordered from Japan. Do me a favor and send me an email and tell me of your frustrations.
Well, it'll be here in the middle of March. he's being transferred back here to Columbus. That's where Aflac is stationed at.
All right. I'm looking forward to hearing from you about how you do with it, all right?
Fantastic, Art.
Take care, buddy. Yeah. So you can, if you wish, take a leap and order these things that are not ready for American distribution directly from Japan. But with it comes an instruction manual in Japanese. And so I'm trying to restrain myself. I'm always, I've always been out there on the edge of whatever technology is around. I've always been a high-quality video fan. So I'm very much into it. And Blu-ray, hurry up. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, this is Joe from Illinois.
Hello, Joe.
Yes, I'd like to talk about these good bacteria called probiotics.
Okay.
And I've given them to my mom after they gave her Cipro, and she felt worse after taking the Cipro than anything else I could do for her naturally. But
what was her problem? Why was she taking Cipro?
She had intestinal problems.
Okay, so some sort of infection.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, then after you use something as strong as that, of course, you've got to replace the cultures.
That's true. Plus, I also found out that most of these pharmaceutical antibiotics also contain these mycotoxins.
Mm-hmm.
And these are guys or little microorganisms, and they eat and defecate inside your intestine.
I don't want to hear this.
And the doctors don't give you anything to kill those off. They don't tell you what naturally it would take.
Great.
And
all right, so why are you telling me all this?
Well, it's just that I know that there are a lot of other people out there who are having problems, and they go to the doctors, and the doctors just want to keep filling you full of crap. And
that's subjective. I object to the word crap. Look, you can complain and bitch and moan all you want about antibiotics, but baby, without them, a lot of people would be dying of otherwise simple infections. So I think the weight of the argument's clearly on the side of the antibiotics. I know a lot of people object to them, but they save lives, millions of lives. So whatever downside they might have, the discovery of antibiotics is keeping a very large number of people alive. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, is that me?
That's you.
Yes, hello. It is, again, a thrill to talk to you. I wanted to talk about ball lightning and whether or not you know if anybody is doing any research in terms of a DNA connection to ball lightning.
What do you mean, DNA?
Well, for instance, my, let's go back, 13, maybe make it 11 great-grandfathers, okay, and if you're still there, his name was James Otis, and he was a member of the Liberty Boys.
Okay, number one, we don't allow any last names on there.
Oh, I'm so sorry, he's a figure of history,
right.
It's like
Yeah, but we don't allow it. So this man...
He was killed when ball lightning came down the chimney and hit him in the head. And he lived for a while, but was not quite the same and would get into bar fights. He had a huge, apparently, schism in his personality, shall we say. And my mother, who is his direct descendant, and they're also descendants of a guy who signed himself on as an indentured servant of the Mayflower, and was a scoundrel and fought sword fights, etc. But my mother saw ball lightning once as a child in Illinois, southern Illinois, in an area around a barn, and then the second time. Likewise, down a hall and up a chimney in a house here in Southern California.
Well, I'd say that's just chance. What you're suggesting is that there's some sort of genetic propensity to see ball lightning, and I see no such connection at all. Just simple luck. I mean, a couple members of your family, separated by some generation, saw ball lightning. Interesting, but somewhat short of a direct connection to genetics. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Phil from Alberta.
Yes.
I was just wanted to mention, I'm feeling a little dispirited about the way America is perceiving Iran and the way we speak about it on the radio. Are you familiar, I'm sure you are, I assume you are, familiar with the acronym MAD?
Mutual Assured Destruction.
Correct, and I knew you would know that.
All right, speak up good and loud so I can hear you.
I knew you would know that.
Yes.
And we have a triad system, which is the planes and the ground and our submarines. We can unleash an insane amount of nuclear weaponry if necessary.
Yes.
Hopefully we'll just do a preemptive strike and take out their facilities.
Well, do you hope that, sir?
No, well, yes, actually, if we can verify that they are building or attempting to build nuclear weapons, I think either Israel or the United States should take a preemptive, not nuclear, just a preemptive strike to knock out the facilities, and if they go crazy, they're going to have to consider, because the other people around the head of the government do not, and they're smart, they're not dumb people. They do not want to get into a nuclear exchange with the United States and Israel, because they know that's a one-legged butt-kicking contest.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think probably we would be the ones to conduct the preemptive strike. I know Israel has done this sort of thing before. Are you still there? No, he's gone. We've done this sort of thing before, but my guess would be we have as much interest in seeing Iran not pursue nuclear weapons, as does Israel, since they no doubt fall into the hands of Islamic terrorists. And so we all know what would occur. So, I think we would probably conduct the strike. If Israel were to do it, the possibility of another Mideast war would be too great. And what the hell, everybody hates us already anyway. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello? Going once, going twice.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Turn your radio off.
My radio's off.
All right, proceed.
Yes, I'd like to go ahead and give a report. I'm not sure if...
On what?
On what I saw here last weekend. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, for one.
Yes, sir.
And I noticed that we had the Secret Service, either CIA, sitting in the uptown area of Charlotte and standing in the middle of the street.
Well, how would you know they were CIA? They usually don't, you know, have, like, CIA on the back of their jacket.
They were black SUVs, dressed in suits, and they also had the earpiece in ear.
Well, that sounds like Secret Service, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they were standing in the middle of the street, and they were just looking around in the uptown area of Charlotte.
Yes.
Carolina, yeah. And I'm not sure exactly what was going on.
Nor am I.
But I just wanted to go ahead and give a report of that, and I'm not sure if anybody else went ahead in the Charlotte area actually noticed what was going on in the uptown area.
All right, well, let's ask. Anybody else in Charlotte notice guys in suits with earpieces sort of wandering around in the middle of Charlotte for who knows what reason? Interesting. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is George from Fosteria, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
I saw the Taken series myself and taped it. And as an abductee, I can say that anyone who has had an experience like this should watch that movie and pay strict attention to what that little girl says clear through that show, and they'll have a better handle on what's happened to them.
Yeah, again, was that an awesome performance or what?
She's wonderful. I mean,
she absolutely knocked me down. I mean it. It was beyond the pale.
It was fabulous. I wrote you an email earlier. Maybe you didn't get it, but when I was a kid, I watched it was either on the old Kraft Theater or the Twilight Zone about this guy that had a pill that turned water into fuel.
Yes.
And he tried to sell it to the government, demonstrated it, and emptied a tank.
I'm sure that somebody killed him, right?
No, he said he wanted $1 million for it.
That's
they
not
wouldn't
much.
Give it to him,
That's
and he completely
much.
Disappeared.
Well, there you are, see?
Well,
you know, if you really had a pill that would turn water into gasoline, you would disappear. Or you would either do one of two things, actually. You would go to work for one of the major oil companies, or you would disappear. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Mark in Atlanta calling.
Hey, Mark.
About the ball lightning, I'm wondering if anybody's correlated this with HAARP, because if you take that type of energy and focus it on that massive scale, you're going to end up with plasma projectiles, basically. And that's kind of what I'm thinking about. This is a small-scale version of it. Of course, I think the reason that HAARP is where it is because you've already got the atmosphere in a state of flux up there with plasma already. So it's just a matter of them focusing that beam, and I believe that's what they're going through that in stages. And then if they can bounce it off the troposphere, no telling what kind of damage they could do wherever it happens to land.
Well, indeed. I wonder what happens. You're certainly correct that they focus a great deal of energy using an array that's very wide at the point of RF emission, and very narrow when it hits the ionosphere. I mean, very narrow. We've never done anything quite like it again. And at that point of contact, I wonder if there is something like plasma that forms. Interesting question.
Right. And I'm just thinking that what they're trying to do is find the rate of propagation so it can come down on a target. I believe that's what they're doing. Or else they're trying to make it such an RF static, if you want to call it, for lack of a better word, that any incoming ballistic missiles will lose their guidance.
Yeah, well, here's what got my attention. I was concerned all along about HAARP, but there was a recent article indicating that the scientists up in Alaska cranked HAARP up to they actually had an aurora going on over the HAARP facility. They had an aurora going on. It's fairly common in Alaska in the northern latitudes. Well, it was raging away as usual up there, or as many times it does, I guess I ought to say. And they cranked HAARP up all the way, or as high as they could at that time. And all of a sudden, the sky above them was full of little sparkly, multicolored things. I mean, it was like a light show that they were producing. All of the scientists, it is my understanding, ran out of the building and said, "Oh my God, look what we're doing." Ran out there like a bunch of children in a fireworks display to look at the effects of what they were doing with this incredible amount of RF pointed right up at the ionosphere, and there it was, sparkling away. Can you imagine? And so, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about HAARP. And while we're on that topic, Dr. Eastland had to bow out of a recent, I don't know if I want to call it a debate with Dr. Nick Begich, but we're looking for Dr. Eastland to reconfirm. I want to do that show. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art. Boy, hey, it's great to get in touch with you again. I called you once a long time ago, back in like 97 or whatnot.
Where? 97. Where are you?
This is John from San Diego. I'm actually on my way home from the Conscious Life Expo up in Los Angeles. And I actually, I saw Dr. Nick Begich today.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, yeah, he gave a speak. I saw Daniel Brinkley today and Sean David Martin.
Okay,
and,
well, anyway, what is it you wanted to mention? We don't have a lot of time coming to the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, I wanted to talk to you about a guest you had on many years ago. Stephen Gibbs, the man with the time machine. I was wondering if you might get him back on the air, because, to be honest, that's got to be the best interview I've ever
heard.
Well,
how in the world can I get him back on the air, sir? He's gone.
Oh, he's gone?
Well, yeah, duh. He's gone. Let me quickly mention this. That young man is, to the best of my knowledge, I've not been able to locate him, Dr. David Anderson, who was an expert on time travel, is also gone. We have made numerous attempts to contact him, and he is gone. So, over the years, a number of people that I've interviewed on the subject of time travel are just gone. Now, isn't that interesting? When do you suppose they could be?